This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a concert of strings featuring two renowned musicians, conversation with an acclaimed pianist who is being honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award, or a sneak peek at circus arts, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. A one-of-a-kind concert, hailed as a musical gumbo fusing classical and American folk music, is slated for this weekend as renowned violinist Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg and Grammy Award-winning fiddler Mark O'Connor perform with the Loyola Symphony Orchestra. Mark O'Connor joins me by phone. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is an exciting musical adventure. Mark, will it be your first performance in New Orleans?
No, I actually played with the Louisiana Philharmonic a number of years ago, and I played, I believe it was the Fiddle Concerto, a composition of mine, with the Philharmonic, and had a great time. Yeah, I've gotten to play a few other times in New Orleans through the years. I love it.
Is this an intimidating venue, being the birthplace of jazz, or does it inspire your creative talents?
I think it inspires. I actually do know a lot of New Orleans history, and I've got a lot of friends from New Orleans. Wynton Marsalis is a really good friend of mine. We've recorded and performed together a lot. And Terrence Blanchard is a really good friend of mine. The very first fiddling I ever heard when I was 8 years old on television was Louisianan Doug Kershaw play Jolie Blonde. I love the Cajun and the Zydeco and the jazz and the blues. Yeah.
When did you first team up with Nadia?
This is kind of interesting. My double violin concerto that I composed, I approached Nadia Salerno-Sonnenberg with that piece, and she agreed to look at it once I had completed it, and she ended up really loving it. We performed it dozens of times together over the last 15 years, and the piece itself really is inspired by New Orleans. I've never lived in New Orleans, but I'm so inspired by the music and the culture there. I would say that a large aspect of the musical inspiration comes from your city. So I'm really excited to perform it there with Nadia.
So the double violin concerto is one of the pieces that will be on the program?
Yes. I think we're going to do a one or two movements of it with the orchestra.
Now, yours is quite an interesting story, as you literally cut your teeth in the company of some of the world's iconic violinists. How did your musical journey begin, and was it a given that you would play the fiddle?
My very first instrument was guitar, and I did become a professional guitarist, and then I took up the violin. One of my great teachers, Stefan Grappelli, is known as perhaps the greatest jazz violinist. And I was his protege and toured with him. At least by the age of 12, I was recording and performing all around the United States.
What was the first big break or the first indication that you would play the fiddle, that it was your calling?
I started winning fiddle competitions, the big one, the Grand Masters in Nashville, when I was just 13. I won over an incredible field of competitors that included some of the best fiddlers in contemporary history, professional, amateur, all ages. And I think some people thought it might be a fluke if it ever happened before. But I came back the following years and got a couple of second places and a couple more first places there. So by the time I was through my teen years, I had really dominated the fiddle competitions around the country. So that was one indicator that I wasn't going to do anything else other than play that violin on stage.
Now, you were born in Seattle. Did you grow up there?
Yes, I was born and raised in Seattle and left just after high school to tour full-time.
Who were some of your other teachers?
Benny Thomason from Texas was the fabulous, iconic American fiddler. In my estimation, probably the most important. He revolutionized American fiddling literature and made it virtuosic and created what we now know as Texas fiddling. He was my principal teacher from age 11 through 14. I was able to learn from the masters in many different genres.
Did you grow up in a musical family?
Everybody loved music, but my family were dancers. I was basically the lone musician.
What was it about the violin that called your name?
The range of emotion that one can elicit from the instrument is just extraordinary. With the flick of the bow, we can create all kinds of layers of emotional depth and mood and spirit. You can move people to tears with this instrument. Today, that's really saying something because we're such a song and vocal and lyric-oriented musical culture. So it's really an extraordinary instrument. It's got an extraordinary history as well, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of it being around and basically kind of perfected in its current fashion. I mean, it really is an instrument that has not been improved, really. You know, you can't get much better than those old chestnuts from the 1600s and early 1700s. So it's incredibly magical. Like, you know, how many things in our society has not been improved upon in the last 300 or 400 years, you know, except the violin. It's an incredible, magical instrument, and it helped create American music. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the very first instrument to ever play the blues, very first instrument to play what we now know as ragtime before piano, the very first instrument to actually create an instrumental from the African-American spirituals, the vocal music of that culture, was the fiddles. So this is an incredible foundational instrument to American arts, and I'm so glad to be a proponent and to spread that news.
You are known for fusing several musical styles, classical, jazz, blues, folk, and making it your own. How do you describe your musical signature?
Well, I've been using the term American classical for quite some time. I'm making a case that American classical music is inclusive of all our indigenous folk musics.
What will audiences experience on this musical journey? Tell us what you will play.
One of the things that I believe Nadja and I will play together in addition to my double violin concerto is a new arrangement of Piazzolla's Libertango. It's really an exciting violin duet, and this will be the first time that Nadja and I have played it. I've arranged the music to where at times both violin players are playing double stop chords, emulating the sound of Piazzolla's accordion instrument. Other times I have myself strumming four note chords, either with my thumb or in the regular pizzicato position, emulating the tronga or the guitar-like instrument of Argentina, South America.
How are you giving back to young musicians who aspire to be like you?
Well, through our method book series, the O'Connor Method, right now tens of thousands of children are learning from the books, and they're learning how to play the violin via American music. And then, of course, we do the string camps, we do as many presentations, and perhaps even more importantly, we teach teachers what we know so they can go out into the field and inspire their students with things that they pick up from us and the materials we give them.
What is it that you hope audiences will take away from this concert experience?
I think there'd be a lot of excitement. I've known Nadja for, gosh, now it's been 20 years. We haven't played the double violin concerto in a considerable amount of time. So this is kind of like, you know, a reuniting. And she's really excited about it, and I am too. This will be really fun.
Acclaimed fiddler Mark O'Connor, this has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Mark O'Connor and Nadja Salerno-Sonnenberg will team up with the Loyola Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Jean Montez in concert in Roussel Performance Hall on Loyola's campus, 6363 St. Charles Avenue, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. More info at loyno.edu and markoconnor.com for info on a teacher's clinic this weekend. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. And we move from strings to percussion. Dr. Wilfried Delphin's love for the piano has taken him around the world. The Xavier University Music Department Artist in Residence and alumnus is half of the international musical duo Delphin and Romaine. He is being honored today with a Lifetime Achievement Award at Gambit's Tribute to the Classical Arts. We talked last week and began our conversation with his thoughts on being honored.
The first thing I thought is, really? Are they honoring me with this award. The second thing was lifetime achievement. Does that mean that people think I've reached the end of my lifetime and the possibility of achieving? And no, it's really quite an honor. I'm very, very happy and very excited about the whole thing.
And your accomplishments are many. Take us back to your youth. When and how did your love for music and piano begin?
Well, I have had an aunt who played organ in our church, and we were a small Catholic parish in a predominantly Baptist community, actually. So the aunt needed help with the church choir. So it was actually she who first said to me, you know, you should learn some of these hymns to play. I hadn't had any experience with playing piano before that. But she gave me some music, and she taught me the basics of reading, and that's how I started. She loved music. I loved her. Therefore, I loved music, too.
And this was in New Orleans?
No, it was actually in a small town in Arkansas, El Dorado, Arkansas. I grew up in El Dorado. My family is from a small community in the northern part of the state called Cane River. Both my mother and father are from there. It's a very historical place. I have lots of family here. So even though I grew up and went to school in El Dorado, Arkansas, I was always taught that Louisiana was home, Cane River first, and then we came to New Orleans so often, I kind of very early on adopted it. And there's an interesting story there, too, because Edwin Romain, the musician with whom I eventually partnered for the major portion of my career, my mother tells me that when she came to school here to go to McDonald 35 during the Depression era, she actually knew Edwin's grandmother, and she recalled seeing Edwin as a very young kid kind of playing around. So New Orleans has always been a part of my life.
He'll tell us more about your journey and how you and the late Edwin Romain became an international musical duo.
Well, we met as students at Xavier, and one of the classes that we had was a piano ensemble. And in that class, there were several of us who we would get together and generally spend our time sight reading duets and two piano pieces. And then at the end of the semester, as part of the requirements for the course, we would put together a recital. Before we left Xavier, one of our teachers, Dr. Malcolm Breda, insisted that we get together and play a couple of the pieces that were featured in the ensemble class in recital. Well, one of those pieces was the Poulenc Double Concerto. Edwin and I did that concert. We went off to graduate school. We ended up going to the same graduate program. That Poulenc Concerto that we learned first at Xavier became the piece that we eventually made our Carnegie Hall debut with.
And this was back in the early 70s?
In the 70s, yeah. I think our debut was 1977.
Now, your journey also landed you in Illinois, at Southern Illinois University?
Yeah, there was a teacher who came to Xavier to do a master class, and he heard both Edwin and me play solo pieces, and he immediately offered us assistantships to study with him at Southern Illinois University. We had no inkling that we would do a career as a team.
What are you most proud of in that journey where you and Edwin were performing all around the world?
Certainly one of the highlights was being invited to play for President Carter at the White House and being invited to sit and have dinner with President Carter and his wife, Rosalynn, and the other dignitaries. It was really quite a fine career, albeit short. It was fine.
I believe after you retired, you went overseas to volunteer in Africa?
Yes. Well, Evan and I had had a career performing. So after his death, I was in a bit of a quandary as to what I should do next. And I thought, maybe I need some space between myself and music in order to kind of clear my mind as to what the future might hold. And I joined the Peace Corps because a colleague of mine there in Carbondale at the age of 60, had joined the Peace Corps, and she said it was the most life-transforming experience that she had ever had. So I got an assignment in Senegal in a very, very remote village. So I stayed there for almost 8 months. I had to cut my service short because Katrina came, and I do have so many relatives here in New Orleans. Peace Corps let me come back to New Orleans to check on the family. Xavier had lost several of his faculty members, so I was asked to teach there, which I did for a couple of years as a volunteer, and then was asked to stay on as artist in residence.
You continue in those roles today?
Yeah, I love it. I enjoy working with the students. I think it's been a wonderful circle in my career because I'm not sure Xavier will be the last school that I work with, but it certainly will be one of the last. And I just think it's a wonderful way to come back to a school that gave me so much as an undergraduate. I'm very, very pleased to be there.
What is your advice to young people wanting to follow in your musical footsteps?
Well, it's cliche, but be prepared. Take everything you do by way of study seriously, because you truly do not know how it may benefit you in the future.
Dr. Wilfred Delphin, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
Acclaimed pianist Dr. Wilfred Delphin is the recipient of the Lifetime Achievement Award presented at Gambit's Tribute to the Classical Arts. Well, every year on Fat Tuesday, New Orleans throws the greatest free show on earth. It's a circus atmosphere where just about anything goes. Now, circus artists are carving a niche under the city's big tent. Entertainment writer David Lee Simmons is here to shed some light on this burgeoning troupe of entertainers. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's great to be back, Diane.
It would seem to be a given in a city that care forgot that circus acts would be naturally accepted into our creative landscape, but it's been a slow go. Why?
Well, I think that it comes and goes in waves, and I think that when you look at one of the great reasons why people come here, New Orleans is a great performance city, and it also has a great history of street performers. When you think of Harry Anderson, got his start as a magician in Jackson Square. You know, Jimmy Buffett was a busker. You know, it definitely attracts people who like to lead a more peripatetic and artistic creative lifestyle. And so sometimes there are waves, you know, peaks and then valleys out a little bit. We saw that and continue to see that with the burlesque scene, which I feel like is at another peak right now. The reason why I wrote this article on my website, davidleesimmons.com, was to sort of get a sense of where the circus artists are in relation. And it really feels like we might be approaching the beginnings of a peak where more artists are coming to New Orleans. Some do kind of perform with some of the burlesque troupes as like a featured artist, but they're starting to form their own troupes, their own groups, and taking up shop in different places, both in the French Quarter and other downtown venues, and also hoping to get their own permanent space where you see circus arts becoming a bigger deal than it has been in recent years.
So where is this influx of performers coming from?
A lot of people are moving from bigger cities, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, the Pacific Northwest in general, Seattle and Portland in particular. And what's happening is, and this is a pretty blanket statement, but I think some people get a little priced out and frustrated with the glut of performers in some of these other cities. And they also really fall in love, like the way a lot of us do, with the creative energy and kind of funky spirit of New Orleans. I think a lot of times with artists, whether it's musicians or theatrical people or whoever has a creative spirit, there's always that common denominator of it's a free and easy spirit here where they want to come and build on the potential that's there. Also, rents are so high in these other cities. And while that's becoming the case here, there are still opportunities to perform here and live here a little bit more cheaply than you might in some of the bigger cities.
Now, let's be clear. We're not talking about big circus acts, are we?
This is not glitzy. This is very much about the big top as we imagined it back in the turn of the century, middle of the 20th century, almost like that Carney vibe, you know, like the real three-ring circus with the ringmaster. It's very much of a do-it-yourself crowd. They definitely kind of like to distance themselves from the high production, super glossy type of circus. I think they want this to feel a little bit more interactive, a more intimate environment where you'll see them perform in venues like One-Eyed Jack's, where the rigging is there to do aerial tricks, but it's still so close that the audience can sense and interact with the performers on a more intimate level. This is pretty much aerialists, rope artists, like trick rope artists, clowns, mimes. I noticed that aerialists are really becoming a big deal here, and you see performers like Sarah Kay Inman, who is actually a very popular local author and writer. She's become a very accomplished aerialist with the Mystic Pony Troupe. But then with the circus artists, and they're very clear about this, I think there's a real concern sometimes among the circus artists that they are lumped in with burlesque, and I think I've been guilty of that as a journalist. These are people, especially the aerialists, but also the fire breathers, the escape artists, they go through intense physical training and also object manipulation with clowns and mimes. This is much more about working in a performance mode that takes years of actual training. So they use and work within the circus culture, but it's a very different kind of performative mode than burlesque dancers who have more of a kind of a formal dance training like ballet and modern dance.
Can you tell us more about the feel for this show? Is this an upbeat type circus atmosphere or no?
Sometimes they can be very tongue-in-cheek. Sometimes they can be a little raunchy. Sometimes they can be very, very upbeat. When I saw the show last year, Cirque de Gras, which is coming back this year as Vaudigras, February 5th through the 8th at the Happy Land Theater in Bywater, there was actually a narrative thread to it, which was actually kind of a post-apocalyptic thread. So there's actually a theatrical element to it that was very moody and actually quite dark. So it depends on the production. But you definitely sense a mood and tone. Sometimes you see a, believe it or not, an opera singing clown getting a tattoo made in the course of a production. I mean, it can be crazy stuff like that, which is Julie Elmo, one of the coolest performers in town. But sometimes it's very dark, serious stuff where fire breathing or fire swallowing or doing an escape act can actually come from a pretty serious storyline. So it varies.
What do you see for the future of circus artists in New Orleans, boom or bust?
I think it has the potential to be a boom, but I think it's going to take some things to happen. I think they're going to need a permanent performance venue space that they can showcase their work and people can know about on a regular basis. And more talented people need to come here and help grow the scene just as a population.
Entertainment writer David Leigh Simmons, thanks.
Thank you.
The first of several circus-style shows opens Friday with Cirque Copines in Wonderland. The all-female troupe will open at One-Eyed Jack's 615 Toulouse Street, performances at 8 and 11, with music, live music by Opus Zeo. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.